Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Steve Moeller, and I represent the petitioner, Rumi Joseph. I'd like to begin, if I could, by briefly addressing the government's jurisdictional argument in this case. The government argues that the court lacks jurisdiction over the petition because Ms. Joseph does not raise a question of law. But in its May 30th decision, the decision under appeal here, the Board of Immigration Appeals decided that Ms. Joseph's motion could not be granted because the statute that's relevant to motions to reopen, 8 U.S.C. 1229A, requires the alien to provide evidence of changed country conditions in the country of nationality. And the Board specifically interpreted that statute to require that the alien come forward with evidence of broad social or political upheaval in the country of nationality or the country to which she will be deported. Now, that is a classic statutory interpretation which the Board said gives it a duty to deny Ms. Joseph's motion, and we can appeal that. That's a straightforward issue of law which this Court has jurisdiction to review under Buchanan. Now, as we outlined in the opening brief, we also think that there are some other errors of law, namely that the Board applied incorrect standards in the course of its alternative holding that Ms. Joseph's petition should be denied, or motion should be denied, because she has some possibility of relocation in Pakistan, and also that the Board, once you knock out the statutory argument and the alternative holding on the basis of relocation, what's left in the opinion doesn't adequately address the motion under Kebe, and that is a failure to exercise its discretion, which Huang says is a clear error of law this Court can review. Now, to turn to the statutory interpretation question first, the text of 8 CFR 1003.2 is a regulation that actually implements the statute 1229A, and the regulatory text uses slightly different language than the statute does. The statute says the alien has to provide evidence of changed country conditions, and then those conditions have to relate to or have to be material to some argument for asylum in the country of nationality. The regulation uses slightly different language and says that an alien can file a motion to reopen an immigration case based on, and I'm quoting here, changed circumstances arising in the country of nationality or the country to which deportation has been ordered. And, of course, that evidence must be material to some kind of underlying claim for relief. Now, our argument is that the most natural and grammatical way to read the language in the regulation is to say that it requires only three things. One, that there be evidence of some change in the country that the person is going to be deported to, that the change arise in that country, and that the change be material to some kind of plausible claim for relief. Now, the government says that the board is essentially right, and that the regulation of the statute mean the same thing, and that it requires this evidence of broad political or social upheaval. But we contend that's wrong. First of all, it's wrong because the board's own precedent requires it to enforce immigration regulations according to their ordinary meaning. That's the CWL case cited in our opening brief. The board has to enforce the ordinary meaning, the board says, unless the regulation's invalid under Chevron. And the government has not suggested, the board has never suggested, so far as we know, anywhere, that 1003.2 is somehow an invalid regulation, whether it's arbitrary or capricious.
But why can't the board flesh this out? I mean, I'm looking at the order under review, the May 30, 2008 order, where on page 2, the board said, or actually the single member of the board, Mr. Hess, who we see a lot, says, because country conditions involve a dramatic change in the political, religious, or social situation. Isn't the board making a decision about, or isn't Mr. Hess at least making a decision about materiality there? To be material, it has to be a dramatic change?
No, because the materiality element in the statute, we think, has to do with the relationship between the change and the underlying claim for relief, which I think is different from saying that the scope of the changed circumstances language.
But don't you, I mean, so you would agree, though, wouldn't you? I mean, there are all kinds of changes that happen in countries all the time. In fact, in Pakistan, there was the assassination of Benazir Bhutto, and now there's a new government. It's not the Musharraf government. I mean, those are all changes in Pakistan. But why is it enough to show that those changes have happened to grant this motion?
No, Your Honor, they are not.
So in other words, there's something about the changes, right, that
yes.
need to bear some relation to the theories under which asylum is granted.
Yes.
And so what is it about the changes that you're arguing for here, whether they're countrywide or not? I take it your argument is that there's nothing in the statute of regulation that would support this dramatic change in the political, religious, or social situation of the entire country.
That is correct.
So what is it that you think has changed, and why do you think it's enough to justify granting this petition?
Well, in 2005, after Ms. Joseph's order of removal became final, her family reunited in Pakistan and arranged a marriage for her there.
Do you know that this man is still there? I mean, the family, in the meantime, seems to have been fleeing all over the world. They've been to Sri Lanka. They're in Nepal now.
Are they in Nepal now, by the way?
They are. That's our understanding. The only evidence in the administrative record about the identity of the man is on pages 143 to 146 of the separate appendix, and that's the statement we filed with the BIA. As that statement discusses, we believe it's the same individual, the same relationship still stands, so it's the same person, but there isn't anything further in the record about the man's identity. But it's obviously a person from Karachi in the area where her father would have been able to arrange a marriage. And everything else in the record indicates that the marriage will be honored if Ms. Joseph is returned to Pakistan, and that her American marriage, if it is not dissolved by the time she returns, will not be honored. And I suppose to sort of answer the larger concerns brought on by the question, there are two different inquiries to make here. One is the inquiry on the motion to reopen. And we are very explicitly saying that the reopening regulation establishes a lower bar, or at least a different bar. It's a kind of gatekeeping rule like Rule 60 in the civil rules. And it establishes one inquiry. And all you have to do there is to show that there's some kind of change and that it's material to some kind of claim for relief. Now, maybe if the claim were totally implausible or it were impossible for the alien to win the ultimate asylum claim, then we would be having a different conversation. But that's not this case. And then there's this separate claim, and that's the claim that happens once the alien gets a second day in court. That's the asylum claim. And I think in order to make sense of 1229A and 1003.2, we have to keep those two inquiries separate and distinct. All the regulation is saying, and I think this sort of answers some of the confusion and some of the arguments in the brief, all the regulation is saying is we have this statutory language, changed country conditions, and the government and the BIA repeat that language. But, you know, the use of the word country as an adjective is not a common expression in English, and to argue whether or not something is a changed country condition, it brings on these sorts of metaphysical debates about angels on pinheads. We argue, is it a countrywide condition, is it something that's personal, or is it something that's in any one of the thousand stages in between? And the regulation comes along and says, and this language has been in the regulation since 1996, it says, well, when the alien comes forward with evidence of some kind of change that's relevant to her circumstances when she goes back, and that gives rise or is material to some kind of plausible claim for asylum and withholding relief, we aren't going to have those sorts of metaphysical disputes about the nature of the circumstances.
This court has already spoken to the distinction that you're trying to draw in the Ching Chen case.
I believe so, yes.
So how do you reconcile your argument with what we said there, which distinguished between changed country conditions and changed personal conditions within a country?
Yes, Your Honor. An awful lot of the cases that deal with the personal circumstances argument are actually cases exactly like the Sheng Chen case. In that case, you had an alien who was ordered removed. He stayed here and then fathered two children. And then he goes to the board and says, well, the birth of my children here...
That's a factual argument. I'm looking for a legal argument. Well, the proper interpretation of the statute and whether the regulation... in effect, alters the meaning of the statute.
It doesn't alter the meaning of the statute.
Or expands it beyond what the statute will bear, since the statute specifically requires changed country conditions in arising in the country of nationality, not just changed conditions arising in the country of nationality.
Well, there's
it must mean something, that modifier.
It must mean something, but... the statute is ambiguous to the extent that the use of the word country as an adjective doesn't mean that it has to be countrywide. It just means that it has to be a circumstance in the country. You know, we have country desks at the State Department.
That makes it superfluous because the statute already says arising in the country of nationality.
Well, that's true, but in either interpretation, it's not a model of clarity. I mean, all we need to win on this issue is to say that the statute is sufficiently ambiguous that the regulation is not a Chevron invalid interpretation of it. And certainly it was legitimate for the Attorney General to say that, you know, whatever, you know, we might say grammatically the words changed country conditions mean, a reasonable interpretation of it, and it's certainly not arbitrary or capricious, is to say that as long as there's a change and it's material to some kind of claim for asylum.
Well, what's the import of our language in the Cheng Chen case, then, which drew a distinction between changed country conditions which and changed personal conditions existing within the country?
Just very briefly, because I'm entering rebuttal time, we read Cheng Chen as a case about immigration fraud. The court was concerned about letting Cheng Chen manufacture a case for asylum based on things he did, knowing about the one-child policy after he got the final order of removal. That's not Ms. Joseph's case. In Ms. Joseph's case, she was ordered removed, then her father arranged the marriage.
So that language in the case has nothing to do with the proper interpretation of the statute?
No,
we should ignore it?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. It has to do with the proper interpretation of the statute, but it's the distinction in that case is between personal circumstances in the United States, which the alien can affect, and circumstances in the country of origin, which he can't.
Mr. Meyer, good morning. Maybe you can help me with this. We ordered the BIA to consider Ms. Joseph's claim that the threat of forced marriage in Pakistan is a changed condition that justifies her motion to reopen. The BIA seems to have decided that the threat of forced marriage was a change in personal circumstances that did not qualify for consideration under the regulation. Did our order not implicitly find that this kind of change in circumstance could qualify under the regulation? What I'm trying to figure out is how the BIA can simply ignore our order. There doesn't seem to be anything in the language of the regulation itself that would exclude changes in personal circumstances arising in the alien's home country.
Your Honor, first of all, Jeffrey Meyer for the respondent.
May I give you a chance to say
I'm sorry.
That.
May it please the court.
I'm sorry. I just couldn't wait to get at you.
Well, in that decision that you're referencing, the court instructed the board to address whether there's changed circumstances in Pakistan, not just the United States. And the board said there were no changes.
But that order indicated, and I want to just add one more fact, that the possibility that with the cooperation of the Pakistani authorities, she could be forced into a marriage in Pakistan now, whereas that was not the case before, was a change in Pakistan, not something that she did in the United States, not something that she had any control over, but the country conditions that she was going to face in Pakistan, while only applicable to her, perhaps, were still changed conditions. And I want to invite you to think of a continuum. This is a condition relating to her. You could imagine in Pakistan, you know, the Taliban taking over one town, but not the entire country, mm-hmm. and yet for that one town, country conditions in Pakistan would have changed quite materially and adversely vis-a-vis somebody from there who had no, let's assume there's some particular language they speak there that's not Urdu, so they can't go elsewhere. And on out to this kind of dramatic change in political, religious, or social situation that Mr. Hess was talking about in his single-member opinion for the board. So the concern I have with Mr. Hess's opinion is that he does seem to leave the bar too high. And I'm not sure whether on this record we have any way of knowing that if the level were corrected, what the board would do with Ms. Joseph's case.
Well, the board found that there were no changed circumstances.
But that's not quite what they say. They say, they just say she hasn't shown changed circumstances. I'm looking at this. And then she says, because country, then it's, he says, because country conditions involve a dramatic change. So he's telling you how he's defined that term. And then, bearing that definition in mind, he says, in this regard, country conditions in Pakistan haven't changed. He says families have pressured their children to marry from time out of mind, whatever. And I don't know. I'm concerned that he has proceeded on the basis of the wrong definition.
I don't think so, Your Honor. And the fact that there were factually no change circumstances in Pakistan.
Well, for her, there are.
Well,
you would agree with that, right? For her, there are.
This case, really, it's no different than the Chen case that
discussing. I think there are actually some significant differences between this case and Chen, since
because the change here is the marriage. She gets married in August
of
2004.
Her marriage in the United States has nothing to do with this case. The government's brief the first time around harped on her marriage in the United States. It is not her theory. We went back and looked at her application for asylum, and if the government wants to argue about some case that we don't have, it's just not very helpful.
Well, Your Honor, that's the change. She's in 2004, August, she's subject to a final order of removal. She gets married in the United States. It's not until that event that she says that, well, now I'd be subject to persecution in the country of origin, which would be the arranged marriage.
I'm sorry, but that really isn't what her petition says. She indicates, I'm looking at essay 49, I fear that my family may physically harm me when I do not want to enter their arranged marriage or follow any of their other rules. I also fear that if my family does not take me back, I would be a single woman with no protection and would be vulnerable. I could also be physically, and then she, on essay 48, she says the same things. She is not in any way confining this application to the now apparently failed marriage that she entered into in this country.
Well, I think she's saying the family's reaction to her was based on her
rejection.
No,
she's saying she thinks that when she goes back to Pakistan as a single woman, not as a married woman, as a single woman, that they will force her into this marriage.
The family.
The family.
I think,
Pakistan.
And I think that is the result of her rejection of their.
That's not what she says.
She is making allegations about familial abuse.
Yeah, I
going
wish
back
she would just at
2000.
Least confront the arguments. You may have a great argument to make in contravention of her petition. That would be fine. We would listen carefully. But pretending that it's over here instead of confronting what's in front of you is not helpful.
Yeah, I read this case to be very consistent with Chen and this court's precedent.
What did she do? But that's because you see this case as one where her marriage in the United States has something to do with it. That's not what our first opinion said. That's not what her application says, and so if we could just pretend that marriage never happened, it's when she goes back to Pakistan that something she's alleging will happen to her.
And we now know that her family was forced to flee Pakistan after they were deported from the United States because of threats they faced as Christians. Yet the BIA speculates that there is no reason that a single Christian woman who has been disowned by her family would be unsafe in Pakistan. How can we reconcile the BIA's speculation with the reality of the family's flight from Pakistan? This Mr. Hess does an awful lot of speculating.
Well, first of all, Your Honor, the family's flight is something that is not in the record. That's just an assertion made here by counsel. It wasn't.
Well, Mr. Hess recognizes the Sri Lanka part. Mm-hmm. So
apparently they made a motion saying that this was
right,
somehow
so it
pending,
record,
right? And he denied it. But that issue is not exhausted before the board, so there's not going to be jurisdiction here to look at that. But I think the family's flight, if in fact it's true, would certainly undermine the case that she's going to be compelled into some type of marriage or that she couldn't live safely somewhere there.
Well, now she's a single Christian woman, disowned by the family.
But the board found as a factual matter that she had not shown that, had this motion to be reopened granted, that would make any change in her asylum application. And that is a factual matter, and that is not subject to review under Kuchara.
What about the board's
sorry about that.
In light of Kuchana and Kuka. The fact that we have now definitively ruled that there is no jurisdiction over motions to reopen except insofar as they raise legal arguments.
Correct.
What about the board's interpretation of the statute and the regulation here, and in particular the changed country conditions language?
Well, I think that it's entirely consistent. Change country conditions, and there's no change in Pakistan. Their change was all stems from her rejection of her family here. This case is no different than the Chen case that this circuit has already said.
Well, the order essentially interprets the statute to require changed country conditions. I'll just read from the order. Because changed country conditions involve a dramatic change in the political, religious, or social situations, the return of the petitioner's family to Pakistan does not qualify as a changed condition. Is the first part of that sentence a correct interpretation of the statute, that to qualify as changed country conditions, there must be a dramatic change in the political, religious, or social situation in the country of nationality?
I think he's looking for a significant change, but it's somewhat academic here in that there was no change.
I understand. I'm not asking about the application.
All right. Sorry.
Because we don't have jurisdiction to review that. I'm talking about the legal interpretation, which is the only thing we have jurisdiction to review.
I think it is
here.
Consistent.
Even the dramatic part?
I think he's talking about a change of significance.
Is there an inconsistency between the regulation and the statute that we need to be concerned about?
I don't think so. I don't see an inconsistency there.
The regulation does use different language than the statute.
It does use slightly different language, but this is a successive asylum case, and this court has talked about the necessity to show changed country conditions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Now, Mr. Miller, you had actually used up your time, but we're going to give you another minute.
Just very briefly, Your Honor, to be clear about our position on the relationship between the different language in the statute and the regulation, we're not saying that they actually contradict one another. We're saying that the meaning of the statute, the literal meaning of the statute, is sufficiently unclear, and that the use of the word country as an adjective is sufficiently unclear, that the regulation is certainly an appropriate interpretation of the statute under Chevron. So unless the court has any additional questions.
Okay.